The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. My name is Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Alejandro Moreno and Stevie Nichol. And we will start the show by talking about La Liga, because there is a big game coming up this weekend. Heading into it, it is Real Madrid on top of the table. They will be away to face Atleti, their city rivals. It is El Derbi Madrileño. 5 wins from 5 from Real Madrid so far. Atleti 5 points behind them in seventh spot. And ahead of the game, Atleti's Koke stirred up some drama by commenting on what might happen if Vini Jr. is to score and follow it up with his dance celebration. He said there'd be trouble for sure. That is to be expected. And there's been a lot of talk about Vini's celebration. All the Brazilian national team players have been coming out to support him, including Neymar, posting pictures on social media. A lot of support has come out for Vinny as well. I mean, he's dancing to celebrate a goal after all. So let's welcome in Frank Leboeuf and Sid Lowe to talk more about this. And Sid, I have to ask you, why has his dancing become such an issue with people in Spain?
I find it incredibly tiresome that this has become an issue. I mean, it just isn't, and it just shouldn't be. Of course, what happens is the nature of the way everyone sort of consumes their football in Spain is that everything has to be a debate all the time. Everything has to be furiously confrontational all the time. And then, of course, you get a comment from Koke like this, which draws the attention towards it. And it's been extraordinary, actually. Listening to today, I got in the car 3 different times. Each time I put sports radio on, and each time I turned it off again within 2 minutes. Because each time it was basically people saying, oh, I can't believe we're talking about this. And of course, then going on to talk about it for hours and hours and hours. And it just seems incredibly, incredibly tiresome to me. And so much so that I almost feel like turning off now, okay? But it's just bizarre. Of course, the worst part about this is that this has led, as a kind of response to this, to some really deeply unpleasant things being said about Vinicius. And that's where, of course, this goes well beyond what could just normally be seen as kind of debate or a little bit of winding up or a little bit of confrontation. And it just seems like a nonsense to me.
Yeah, it does seem like it's gone a bit far, doesn't it, Ale?
Unnecessarily so. Now, what I would say to Koke and Atletico Madrid, and I'm just going to keep it to that conversation and not some of the other things that have been said about Vini Jr. If you're Koke and Atletico Madrid, I would ask them, why do you think you get to legislate how Vini Jr. celebrates when he scores a goal? Why? You don't have any right to legislate or dictate how Vini Jr. celebrates a goal. He has just scored. Now, you may like it, you may not like it. Guess what? You know how you can control that situation? Don't let him score! Don't let him score! He doesn't dance if he doesn't score. So why is Koke even presenting this as a possibility of Vini Jr. scoring? How about, if indeed you're going to address this issue, how about you just say, well, we're going to try to keep him from scoring. That will be our job. That will be our focus. And if we do our job, we'll keep it at zero and we'll find a way to win this game. Period. That's it. End of story. If you're Atletico Madrid, if you allow Vinicius to score, you have now given up the right to complain as to how he celebrates. You forfeit that right the moment you allow the player to score a goal. Once that happens, he can do whatever he wants, whether you like it or not.
Do you agree, Frank?
I completely agree with Ali. I think it's like, okay, it's done. We all know the fans, Atleti fans and Koke already accepted that the fact that Vinicius is going to score. And they don't want him to celebrate. And I agree with Ali. Make sure he doesn't score, therefore he won't celebrate. And that's a stupid comment. I know what he wants to do. He wants to create, you know, rivalry and a bigger one. Which is stupid as well, because they don't need that. They want to create something would bring the debate in another area where it's only the, what we're going to see on the field. We're going to describe what's going to happen and how it works. But it makes no sense to make a comment like that. Because again, if you make a comment like that, it means that you already accept that Vinicius Junior is going to score a goal.
Do you think that it's getting a bit mixed up, Stevie? We're showing some of the moments that could be perceived as Vinny showboating. This is what Ancelotti had to say about that. This is coming after the Mallorca game. He said he's a special player because of how he plays, although at times, because of his way of playing, rivals might get angry.
Well, there was an occasion last week where he was showboating, but that is the only time I can remember him doing that. To me, the way he plays the game is his natural way of playing the game. And really, it's up to the coach and probably the likes of Benzema, the senior players, to have a little word in his ear, because what will end up happening is it's fine when you get away with it, but eventually somebody's going to get you, and they're going to put you in the stand or on the treatment table, one of the two. So I have no problem with the way he plays the game. Yes, forget the showboating, but as for Koke, you know, maybe Koke's just trying to wind him up. Maybe try and distract them, because at the end of the day, it's going to have to be something like that, because I don't think they have the ability to stop Vinny Jr. any other way. So why not have a go at them and try and wind them up?
Well, to that point, though, Stevie, and you just mentioned that the way that this is stopped is by somebody physically then taking a shot at Vinny Jr. Right. If you're Koke, you're already telling referees, you're already telling everybody, all of us, that if he scores and he dances, there's going to be trouble. So you are already creating a situation in which the attention is coming either on you or your teammates, that if indeed Vinicius Jr. is targeted, now the referee has already predetermined before, ahead of the match, that there may be trouble, and so therefore I now have to punish that trouble. So you're creating an environment in which you're not going to benefit. So it's triple jeopardy. You give up a goal, Vinicius Jr. dances, and then on top of that, you get a red card because of a bad tackle. How are you going to win a game doing that? I have no idea.
And you wonder if there might be some showboating as well, now that he's heard this, and it might just have fired him up even more. Frank, I know you're not a great fan of the showboating, though. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I think it's all about respect towards the opponent. You know, you can do whatever you want, but there is a room, or there is a situation where you can do that. When you try something special because it can be effective and it can bring you to a good situation to score a goal, I agree. But what we see that is what I see with Neymar most of the time. Trying to tease the player, trying to humiliate him, but not creating something, because we can see that Vinicius Junior is dropping. So that's completely useless for me to do so. Yeah, it's an entertainment, okay, it can please the fans, but it doesn't bring anything to the team and to the result of the game. So, and he can get injured, which would be stupid in that way, because it's not what you're looking for when you're a football player. When you're a striker, when you play on the left side offensively, what you want is to be get in a great position to score goals, not to drop because you want to tease a player.
What's been the talk in Spain then, Sid, about the showboating and the toying with his opposition?
Well, obviously that really picked up speed last week because of the fact that it happened against Mallorca, and Javier Aguirre had words with him. Even actually Carlo Ancelotti had him, and you've shown the quote there, but I think Ancelotti had words with him during the game. So did Toni Kroos, to say, you know, just to kind of don't get involved. I thought Aguirre dealt with it reasonably well, though, insofar as that there was a confrontation with Vinicius during the game. But after the game, he said, look, they've beaten us. That's it. That's the end of it. There's nothing else to say. There's no more to complain about. And Vinicius has to play the way that he plays, because that's his game and that's what he wants to do. I think it's probably worth adding something as well, which is that even if a player, by the way they play, maybe provokes fouls or encourages fouls or is the victim of fouls, I think the key is that word victim. But imagine that Vinicius, because he showboats, at some stage does get absolutely hammered by somebody and gets injured. That injury will not be the responsibility of Vinicius. It will be the responsibility of whichever player does that to him. And I think it's really important that we don't lose sight of that, that even if it's true that a player can provoke the kind of tackles that might lead to an injury, the player who does the tackle is the one that's to blame.
No, sorry, Sid. No, if you go and ask professional footballers, you go and ask professional footballers. I'll tell you what, you ask professional footballers, and I'll bet you, almost every single one that watched that game, or the piece of footage that we just saw of Vinny getting kicked, every single ex-pro that I know would be sitting going, you know what, you deserve that, it's on you. They weren't blaming the guy who tried to kick him, they were blaming him. It's a professional thing. It's one of those unwritten rules that if you do that and you get clobbered, it's on you. It's not on the guy that clobbers you. When you ask for it and you receive, it's your fault.
Frank, you're nodding.
I don't buy that at all.
Yes, no, because I understand what Sid means, but who cares in the opposite team or opposite clubs if Vinicius Junior gets injured because he's showboating? That's the thing. Nobody cares. Nobody's going to be responsible. The only responsible or the only victim, of course, will be Vinicius because he's going to be injured. But injured because of showboating, not because of showing some skills to score a goal. Again, he's teasing the others. It's not accepted by the other. It's disrespectful in a matter of where you don't do that to serve the football. You just do that to tease the opponent, to humiliate the opponent. That's how you risk the injury.
And said, there's another part to this as well. If Vinicius is the one that gets caught, then that's a good thing. Because what generally happens, or what happens a lot of the time, is when you have somebody on your side who's showboating like that, a lot of the time, it's not the guy showboating that gets the kick, it's the next guy. So when that ball's laid off, and if it's not a good pass, the next guy's the one that gets it. And again, professionally, a professional will point the finger at Vinicius if that was to happen. It would be like, I just got clobbered because of you.
Sid, you get the right to reply to this, of course.
No, I mean, I'm just saying that the thrust of what Steve's saying, while I can understand the frustration, while I can understand you're absolutely right that a player thinks that this isn't on and you're breaking some sort of code, but essentially that footage that we just saw of Vinicius, what did he do that was bad? He dribbled past a player, he put it through a player's legs. I don't understand how you can possibly suggest that to go and injure a player because of that is justified. Now, I can understand why players would be furious about it. I can understand why they'll be frustrated, and I can understand why they overstepped the mark. But I don't think we can be in a position in which we victim blame a player for getting kicked by another player. I just don't buy that as much as anything else, I don't buy it as a moral argument, let alone a footballing one.
You must know a ton of professional players. Go and ask them. If you don't believe me, go and ask them all. They'll tell you the same thing. And actually, what Vinicius did was...
I'm not saying they don't feel like that. I agree with you. I think they probably do. But what I'm saying is I don't think that we should be justifying those kind of challenges on the grounds that someone made them look a little bit silly. Vinicius is going to spend his career making a lot of players look very, very silly. And entirely within the rules of the game, unlike going and booting him up in the air, which certainly isn't within the rules of the game.
Well, see, making somebody look silly and then going back to try and humiliate them is two different things as well.
What is it like smack talk and sledging that you see in many sports?
Well, I would just say that I don't mind Vinicius doing whatever he wants to do in the field and showcasing all his skill set, as long as it is useful to him and his team. What he did against Mallorca, once he got past the guy, which was part of his skill set, is the holding on to the ball and now showing the ball and inviting a challenge. At that point, he's no longer a victim. And while I understand what Sid is trying to say, at that point, he's no longer a victim. He has become a participant in whatever happens next, because that would not have happened had Vinny Jr. not been standing on the ball. And I love me some Vinny Jr. But there are moments in which you've already shown how good of a player you are. Now just lay the ball off, and we all move on with our lives. The stepping on the ball, everybody knows what happens next, and we saw what happened next.
Frank?
Okay, yes, we are digressing a little bit in that matter, in that debate, because I think what Jorge just said is warning Vinicius to not dance after scoring a goal, and not what the showboating we are talking about in the matter of teasing the players. I think Koke doesn't accept the fact that Vinicius Junior is going to dance and is gonna show disrespect to the fans, maybe, of Atleti. Well, that's not a concern for him. Vinicius Junior has the right to do whatever he wants, you know, after scoring a goal. But what we saw against Mallorca, that's unacceptable. It's like, you know, when you get red carded because you react at somebody who just pushed you or just punched you. I saw the game in Europa League Rennes against Fenerbahce, where Traore was sent off yesterday for Rennes, where he was just defending himself, but he was pushed by the defender and received a red card. That's what it is for Vinicius. You tease, and you get kicked. And according to Sid, is the one who kicked, who is guilty for the gesture, for what he did. Now, you have somebody provoking, and Vinicius, in that matter, provokes the others. So, as a human being, with all the ego you can find on the field, you would have a reaction, that's for sure.
Here's the thing.
Okay, if you point on this.
If you're poking a bear, and you poke the bear, and you poke the bear, and the bear ate your arm off, is the bear's fault? No. Why are you poking the bear to begin
an
with?
Animal, not a professional footballer.
Yeah, well, that's a little different.
All right. Well, you said it. All right, let's take a look at the recent results between Atleti and Real Madrid when it does come to this. Not the best reading for Atleti of late. Doesn't look too promising for the host, but Real Madrid may be still without Benzema in this game. Sid, what's the latest on whether we will see him or not in El Derby?
Well, he didn't train today. He didn't train today, and what Ancelotti had said in midweek was that if he trains with the team and is ready, he will play. If he doesn't, he will not, and there won't be any risk taken on him. So what that means is, very simply, if he's okay to train tomorrow, I think there's a chance that he starts on the bench, but I don't think he's very likely to start this game. Obviously, that will be defined by what happens tomorrow and what kind of state they think he's in.
Rodrigo, best alternative then for Hazard? For Benzema? And not Hazard, sorry.
100%. And I think it's clear to see that the relationship between Rodrigo and Vini is a very natural conversation when it comes to the way they look for each other and find each other in the final third. Against Mallorca, that was very clear to see. And I have no doubt that this is the best version of Real Madrid that we can see without Benzema being on the field.
What Rodrigo just did there, that's what Hazard used to do.
Way so, back in the day.
So, yes. And I think, to be fair, Ancelotti's kind of, after the game last week, he kind of laid the groundwork to let everybody know what he was going to do. And there's absolutely no chance that Hazard starts. It will be Rodrigo down the pipe.
On the Atleti side of things, though, Sid, I want to talk to you a little bit about Antoine Griezmann, because we all know the story. We all know the minute he's coming on in and the minutes that he's playing. But surely Diego Simeone can't keep this up all season, can he?
Well, Simeone said in midweek, I think the first time in public that we've seen a sign that Simeone doesn't like this. Now, obviously, we knew that he didn't like it, but the first time he actually kind of expressed that publicly, he made the point in midweek, he said, the team plays better with Antoine Griezmann on the pitch. In other words, I want him on the pitch for as long as possible. I don't want to be putting him on after 63 minutes. Now, we talked about this a little bit last week, didn't we? But this is a situation in which they hoped that the pressure they were applying on Barcelona would have led to a resolution already. We believe, or at least they would like to believe, that they're still only a couple of weeks away from this being sorted out by some sort of agreement being reached between the two clubs, maybe a change in terms of that clause and how much they have to pay. But no, Simeone isn't happy about this at all. And I think it is problematic. It's been working remarkably well so far. Antoine Griezmann has handled it remarkably well. He hasn't complained. He's been coming on and scoring goals. It hasn't done Atletico Madrid as much damage as they would like. But as you say, that's right, it is unsustainable. It cannot go on like this for the entire season.
Yeah, it's interesting as well, Frank. I just wonder what the reaction is in France to it and if they're following the situation here.
Well, the question has been asked to Didier Deschamps when he made the list for the national team. And he said that, of course, you know, the lack of rhythm that Griezmann is going to face can be dramatic for the national team as well, you know, because if he plays, you know, he can be only playing maybe an hour and be tired. But at the same time, he tried to laugh at it and talked about freshness and said that Griezmann is going to be very fit for the World Cup. So it's a concern. And I think it's Olivier Dacourt, the former Everton and Roma player, who said, I don't understand how he accepted the deal to go back to Barcelona with that kind of agreement. And why his agent or himself didn't say, no, I don't want that, the 40 million if I don't play, or if I play more than half of the games, I don't know what it is. So that's the concern. Why his agents accepted that, and it's impossible to see, to not see Griezmann more on the field, and everybody is expecting that some agreements will come between Barcelona and Atletico Madrid for the best of Griezmann and for the national team as well.
So let's get your predictions then for this one, Atleti against Real Madrid. You've got a Real Madrid win, but it's a small margin. 1-0, right, Ale?
Yeah, I'm taking Real Madrid. I trust Real Madrid. I don't trust Atletico Madrid. Everything for Atletico Madrid nowadays, and seemingly for the last few years, is just hard work and stressful and dramatic. And so you beat Porto in Champions League in the manner in which they did, and it seems like, okay, here's where this team takes off. They carry that on against Celta Vigo on the weekend and say, okay, really this team is back. And then they lose midweek in Champions League against Leverkusen. And just for a little bit of context, Leverkusen are 17th. In the Bundesliga. There are 18 teams in the Bundesliga. They're second to last. They've only won one out of six matches. They haven't played well in Bundesliga. They were not playing well coming into this match, and yet somehow they were all over Atletico Madrid. No chance I'm trusting Atletico Madrid. I'm going to take Real Madrid 1-0 away from home.
Sid, we'd just like to give you some credit for the dedication to your trade, because you are actually joining us from Valladolid, because you've been at the Valladolid Cadiz game, always dedicated when it comes to La Liga. We didn't manage to get a prediction from you. What is your prediction for this one?
I thought I'd go away with that. I think Real Madrid will be too strong for Atletico. They've looked very, very strong all season. Even when they haven't played well, Madrid, you always feel like there's a way through. Atletico aren't defending well. They're not attacking particularly well. I'm going to go for Real Madrid to win 2-0.
So we've got a big weekend of La Liga action coming for you. As always, on ESPN Plus, you can see all of those games, including El Derby, which is coming up on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern. Our coverage will begin. Make sure you join us for it. The show will follow right after it. I just want to hear from Luis Enrique, the Spanish national team coach as well, because of the latest call-up, the last call-up, of course, ahead of the World Cup this winter. And this was on him excluding Ansu Fati. He said, we brought him in previously to get into the dynamics of the group so that he has contact with the national team. He did not play. Now he does in his club, but he has only played one official game as a starter. It says something. Sid, what's your reaction to that?
Well, what it says, as Luis Enrique is pointing out, is that he doesn't think that Ansu Fati's form has come back yet. I actually genuinely think he's concerned that it may not do, and that it may not do so in time for the World Cup. And this is the thing that concerns Barcelona as well. Now, of course, people have to be careful about how they handle this, careful about what they say about Ansu Fati after the two really bad injuries he's had. Certainly no one wants to be fatalistic about it in public. But what I think Luis Enrique has said is what people don't want to say, which is that he doesn't see Ansu Fati at the moment at the level necessary to be in the Spanish national team. Unless something changes really quite significant over the next couple of months, that would suggest that Ansu Fati does not go to the World Cup.
What do you think of that, Ale?
Well, I don't like it, because I have to say, if you evaluate the Spanish national team and you see where they may be flaws and what may keep this team from winning the World Cup or having a real chance at winning the competition, is what they do in the final third. You're still depending on Álvaro Morata scoring goals for you. This is where the Spanish national team is. So you would want to have, at the very least, options of players that could give you something different. Ansu Fati is one of the few players in the final third, Spanish players, that can give you something different. I still think he's a better option than whatever else Luis Enrique may count upon to be on that left-hand side. I think his ceiling is higher than that of Ferran Torres. And given what the start of the season has been for Ferran Torres, I would rather have Ansu Fati in the left-hand side than I would Ferran Torres. Even now, I would make that choice. And I certainly would not make it sound as if, well, because he's not playing at Barcelona, he can't play for the national team. Well, who is he going to play in place of in Barcelona? Who is he going to sit down? Are they going to sit down Dembele to play Ansu Fati? Are they going to sit down Rafinha to play Ansu Fati? He's going to have to fight his way into Barcelona. I understand that. But I still evaluate the Spanish national team, and I look at what they have available, They don't have Dembele available. They don't have Rafinha available. And so, therefore, which ones are the better options ahead of Ansu Fati in that Spanish national team, even right now, even with Ansu Fati not being at his best level? I don't think those players exist.
Yeah, well, time will tell. We'll obviously find out what happens when it comes to the World Cup. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So there will be seven Premier League games going ahead this weekend. The ones that you see highlighted will be postponed. But one game that will be going ahead is Spurs against Leicester. A disappointing midweek result for Spurs against Sporting in the Champions League. And a few questions being asked of the side right now, particularly over Heung-min Son's place in the Spurs team. Eight games, no goals so far, one assist. Conte has said that no one is undroppable. You wonder if this game against Leicester, Stevie, is the chance for Conte to sit Son.
Well, there will come a time when he has to sit him, because when you look at the stats, he's on the team to score goals. You know, he's not there to hold the ball up. He's not there to be a top assist guy. He's there to score goals. And he has credit in the bank for what he's done previously. And the only man that will tell you how long the credit line is Conte. But when you look at that, eight games, no goals, you have to think that it's coming sooner rather than later. Particularly when you've gone out and spent the amount of money you did on Richarlison, who, when he's been asked on the field, has produced. So I wouldn't be surprised if it comes at the weekend. But at the same time, Conte may think, OK, this is one last chance. Because he deserves it for what he's done. But could run out this weekend.
Sid truly has been on his travels over the last week or so over the Iberian Peninsula. He was at this game in Lisbon that finished 2-0 to Sporting. How did Spurs look to you, Sid?
I thought they had 15 minutes or so that were pretty good at the start of the second half when they created chances. But they looked a little bit lacking in ideas, and it was striking that the opportunities that fell to Emerson rather than to forwards. Son, I don't think, had a chance. I think Kane had one chance, Richarlison maybe one or two. And it just looked like a Spurs side that lacked a little bit of fluidity, that lacked a little bit of control. I was struck at times at times it looked like a line of five and then a circle of five in front of them, but a long way in front of them. It just didn't really function as well as it should have done. That said, I still think they'll feel a little bit hard done by to have been caught out the way they were at the very end.
It's interesting, isn't it, with Conte, because you know that the doubters and the critics will come out and talk about how he does in European competition to LA.
And this group in Champions League for Spurs is a layup. It's a tap-in. And it should be one that they are willing and capable of taking control of. And what I was most disappointed from Spurs' perspective in this particular game against Sporting is when there was a moment to win the game, it wasn't them that was controlling that moment. It wasn't them that took control and said, yeah, we are the better team. We have the talented players. We are going to take control of this group right now. That wasn't the case. It was Sporting. It was Sporting that took the chances going forward. It was Sporting that took the risk going forward. And while they were playing at home, if indeed you're the best team in that group, show it and showcase all that talent that apparently you have on the field. They seem to have taken a step back, and Sporting were willing to take the chances, take the risk, score the goals, win the game, and Spurs are just looking around like, oh, well, we don't know what happened here. Well, what happens? You got beat. You got beat. They have to be playing a whole lot better than that if indeed they're going to be the team that they want to be, not only in Champions League, but certainly in the league as well.
Meanwhile, a young Englishman did stand out on the pitch that night, Sid. You've been writing about him. Marcus Edwards was fantastic. Tell us more.
He was just brilliant. He was really, really enjoyable to watch. His touch is good. He moves really smoothly. His footwork is fantastic. And he almost scored what... You know what? I mean, it's impossible to remember every game you've ever been at, isn't it? But I don't think, had he scored that goal, I don't think I would have ever seen a better goal inside a stadium, ever. It was an extraordinary run. In the end, he didn't score from 5 metres out. It's extraordinary that he didn't manage to score. Maybe that makes it even better. Maybe that makes it art for its own sake, to be able to produce a moment of magic like that, not even score, but still have the entire stadium standing and giving you a standing ovation. It's one of those moves as well where everyone's thinking, he couldn't, he hasn't, can't believe it. He's still going. And then in the end, of course, unfortunately, wasn't able to finish it off.
Yeah, make sure to go and check out Sid's article on Marcus Edwards. He did used to play for Spurs, put in a great performance for Sporting. Brave to go to Portugal as well. And it's seeming to have paid out. You can check that out over on our website. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, the Revere Derby, a fierce rivalry between Borussia Dortmund and Schalke, as you just heard, known as the mother of all derbies. We missed out on it last year with Schalke being relegated, but they are back in the top flight. And so this fierce rivalry is back in the Bundesliga, and we are all for it. As we now welcome in Archie Rintut to the show to talk more about Borussia Dortmund. Now, we'll get to the game in just a moment, Archie, because I want to, first of all, look back on what happened in the Champions League to Borussia Dortmund this week, because they played well against Man City, and then Erling Haaland pops up with the winning goal. They know too well what he's capable of. I'm interested to know what the reaction was back in Germany, that it was Haaland spoiling the party.
It was front page of Kicker the next day, the fact that Haaland scored. Of course it was. It had to be him. And yet, I think from a Dortmund perspective, it was all about the fact that they got so close to shutting them out and ultimately didn't do that. And the reasons for that, I think Edin Terzic bringing on Nico Schlotterbeck for Anthony Modeste invited more pressure onto them at a late stage. That certainly played a role. And I think there's also an element where playing against Manchester City for 90 minutes, you are going to get tired. And it's inevitable that they will create chances. I don't think Alexander Meyer had a great game in goal either. I think that is a factor. And it will give Schalke some hope going into this game. The one thing that has also made headlines has been the reaction of Mats Hummels, who was going off on one at his teammates at the full-time whistle, as you could see on the cameras, particularly at captain Marco Reus. They are both the two most senior players at the club. Hummels is vice-captain. And to just see Reus ignore him, I thought, told you something about squad politics, albeit we're seeing it being spun more as, look, it just shows you how much Hummels cares. And sure, I think
There is something about having a healthy friction in a team. But that said, you'd at least want the other person that you're shouting at to engage with you. And probably a little bit worrying for Mats Hummels that Marco Reus wasn't. That said, Hummels has come out today and said, oh, why has it been blown up in the media? It's like, well, you probably want to have this conversation behind closed doors. That's how it is.
Yeah, you do wonder what's gone on behind closed doors in recent times between the two when we saw that. So that's what we know from the Borussia Dortmund camp right now. What can we expect in this fixture at the weekend against Schalke?
Well, Dortmund, as we saw from the odds, are very much the heavy favourites for this. However, to just say, oh, Dortmund will turn up and win, I don't think it's going to be that simple. Dortmund in the Bundesliga this season, I'd say, despite the points tally, have been quite underwhelming. The reason why that Manchester City performance was viewed so favourably was because of how bad the last one in the Bundesliga was against RB Leipzig. They didn't have a shot on target, losing 3-0 last weekend. So there's some hope after that performance that they can bring more to the table. Schalke, also relief for them that they won in their mini Ruhr derby last weekend against Bochum. But coach Frank Kramer needs to get some credit in the bank. And doing that with a result here, a result for Schalke would be a draw. That would be a very positive performance because the quality of players in the Dortmund squad far outweighs Schalke. Didi Hamann was saying in the German press today that no Schalke player would get into the Dortmund team. And I agree with him on that. So look, they have no derby experience in their team, but let's see. This fixture can produce strange events at the best of times. So I remember just a few years ago when Schalke came back from 4-0 down at halftime to draw 4-4. And yeah, it has certainly a sense of the special about it in all senses of the word.
Yeah, one not to miss for sure. Augsburg are taking on Bayern as well. I want to get to this game because we will get to the fact that Augsburg won this fixture last season. But first of all, let's focus on Bayern in the Champions League as well. They beat Barcelona, although there's been a feeling from the Catalan press and from many Barcelona fans that Barcelona, for long periods, were the better side, particularly in the first half. And I wondered if word of that had got back to Germany, and if so, what the feeling's been about this.
Oh, the Germans have eyes as well, okay? I think they agreed with that assessment. Self-criticism is, I'd say, one of the most foremost traits in Germany at all times. So that wasn't going to escape them on any level. For Julian Nagelsmann in European competition, I think sometimes in big games, the performances have been there from his teams, but not the results. And this was the reverse of that. He was able to change the tide of the game by bringing on Leon Goretzka for Marcel Sabitzer at halftime. And sure, Robert Lewandowski did miss those chances. I think they were difficult chances. They were not very easy, as has been maybe overstated a little bit. But yeah, positive for Bayern. That said, they're always just one little result away from a crisis. The fact that they've made their big, inverted commas here, worst start to a season in 12 years because they've drawn their last three games, I think it's just checking their progress a bit. They still have a very strong squad. It's been a topic in Munich this week that Sadio Mane has not scored for nearly 5 hours now, which is a bit harsh, but he has been playing more through the middle than he was at Liverpool, where he was more tucked out on the left. So, yeah, I think that there are a few storylines coming into this game. The fact Lucas Hernandez is also out injured, joining Kingsley Coman on the sidelines, actually eases the selection headaches for Julian Nagelsmann. So, yeah, Augsburg, you put it under tricky place to go, okay? Despite the fact they've lost all three of their home games so far, I still can't see past anything other than a comfortable away win here.
Yeah, just taking a look at the last time that these two faced at Augsburg's ground and how that one turned out. So, obviously, actually, you just mentioned it, but it is three draws in the Bundesliga. Will that be in their minds? Has it been brought up about what happened last time around?
Brought up? Yeah, for sure. So this is seen as the small Bavarian derby because Augsburg is just 70 kilometres or so down the road or up the road from Munich. The big Bavarian derby for Bayern is against 1860 Munich, who they haven't played in over a decade now. So for Augsburg, this is the most meaningful fixture of the season. To be honest, that's the case for most clubs in the Bundesliga when they play Bayern. Rafael Gikiewicz, as well, was under a bit of pressure, their goalkeeper at the start of the season, but come up with a few heroic performances to get them their two wins of the season so far, including a big penalty save away at Werder Bremen last week. He needs to have a stunning game, and he does have this knack of rising to the occasion. So, look, they have the ability to make it difficult for Bayern. It's just, can Bayern click into gear and take that momentum from that second half against Barcelona?
So all OK, though, in the Bayern camp, Archie? That's just something that I've been interested in hearing about, too, because obviously because of those consecutive draws, as always, word does come out, but you never know what to believe. What is the talk of what's going on behind the scenes?
I think with Julian Nagelsmann being under a lot of pressure because of, I'd say, the leadership of the club is quite conservatively minded, and the fact that he had his private life in Germany's biggest tabloid over the summer, that did not go down well. Also, the fact that the way they went out of the Champions League last season against Villarreal, a side that Bayern see themselves well above, that has put a lot of pressure on Nagelsmann. Add to that all the transfer money spent, and it creates this environment where he needs results and big performances quickly. So it's still a pressure situation because I think they started the season scoring so many goals, it raised expectations up a level that they've not been able to keep to, which I think is understandable. You're not going to score 7 goals every week, and it's made teams in the Bundesliga actually put more men behind the ball and say, look, if we go out and play and try to play football against them, we are going to get hammered. So I think they've taken necessary precautions. There will still be pressure on Julian Nagelsmann because that comes with the Bayern job. But for now, the wins against Inter and Barcelona, I don't think he could have really done more. He just really needs, particularly before this international break, a convincing win, because otherwise, particularly in the Munich bubble, that's 2 weeks for all that crisis talk to cook up again.
Yeah, look out, Augsburg. One to look forward to this weekend. Archie, enjoy those games. Thanks so much for being with us. And that will do it for the latest edition of ESPN FC. Extra time is coming up, though, and I can tell you, what starts as a professional display ends up going a little crazy.
It goes in a different direction.
Stay tuned to find out.
Go here, wire.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay, Stevie, Ale and Frank. I'm a bit worried about what Stevie might say today.
Oh, why is that?
Just because of how the show opened the other day. But let's not go back there, all right? None of that. If you were watching, you'll remember. The first question is from a Stephen, but a Stephen with a V. Much has been made about this year's Liverpool, this year being similar to Klopp's final season at Dortmund. Do you think it's going to end well for him and the Reds, or do you see Klopp abruptly leaving after this season?
Oh my God, it's all doom and gloom, huh? Holy smoke. Wow, that's a bit early for that show, isn't it?
Well, it's just a question.
I know, but still, I mean, imagine even thinking that way after 6 games. 3 months ago, he could almost broke every sort of record in history of English and British football, and now somebody's wanting them at the door. No, listen, this isn't the first time they've had such a bad run. If you remember, they lost, what, 6 home games in a trot a couple of seasons ago during the pandemic. So they've had a patch where it's been as bad. Now, you could argue whether this is worse. I would probably say it's been slightly worse, but no. No, Klopp's not going anywhere at the end of this season.
There you go.
Regardless.
There is your answer, and I think it's quite emphatic too. Question for Ale. Do you think Xavi should be starting Busquets in big Champions League games? He clearly lacks pace and cannot cope with the intensity. Why not Kessie and Frankie in a double pivot role?
Well, it's an interesting point, and I'm sure it's something that Xavi is thinking about, simply because we have seen that Xavi has not in any way questioned himself when moving aside from the old guard of Barcelona. So Piqué, he's sitting on the bench. Jordi Alba, he's sitting on the bench. And in the match against Bayern Munich, what happened, it was very clear to see, Jamal Musiala most of the time would drop in and essentially man mark Sergio Busquets. So now Barcelona don't have or didn't have that natural outlet. And they always seem to go through Busquets almost as if to ask for permission to then go forward. First goes to Busquets and then he distributes. It's the way that they play. He wasn't able to find the ball, and so now Barcelona was bypassing that pressure. And then you saw Barcelona going out on transition in the first half where they created chances from that transition. I'm sure Xavi and his staff would pay attention, watch the video and say, maybe, just maybe, this is something that we think about doing. That they can't just concentrate on one player on Busquets, that we're able to have different outlets so that we can either play through the midfield or bypass the pressure. I don't think that time is yet, because I think that Xavi believes that Sergio Busquets is still critical to their success.
Stevie, do you think it will be a concern for Pep Guardiola that Man City have conceded a goal or more in almost every game this season so far?
Well, it should be. You know, we know that he likes to go forward. Listen, I think it was, what, 3 seasons ago where they were losing a lot more goals than that. And we questioned whether he was interested in defending, because he didn't really seem to be doing anything about it. And then all of a sudden they go out and they bought Diaz, they buy Walker. So clearly he does think about it. But right now I would suggest that even though they might be losing a goal a game, they're creating 5 and 6 chances and scoring 2 or 3 or 3 and 4. So it should be a concern just from a professional point of view. But when you think of Man City, is that the first thing you think about? A problem at the back?
Think of
no.
A big blonde safety net that's Norwegian.
That could be the answer.
Jan? Is it Jan we're talking about?
What do you think, Frank? Do you think Pep will be concerned about this?
Yes, when you're a coach, you're always concerned because you know that if one day you're not in a good fortune, you can, if you concede a goal, you might lose the game. But in a matter of Erling Haaland being in the team, scoring at least 1 or 2 goals per game, it's not really a concern, because that's the essence of football: scoring more goals than the opponent, and you win the game. And as long as the front line will score so many goals and Haaland will be being the first one, yes, it's a concern, but it's okay. So far, it's okay because it's so productive offensively.
Frank, let me stay with you. There's a question here. What's the mood like in France after the whole Pogba cursing Mbappe debacle?
It's not really about the Mbappe debacle and the cursing that Pogba tried, if really he did. It's mostly about the family war that you can see, that his brother Matias was arrested yesterday, interrogated like for 24 hours, admitted that he made a video accusing his brother. That's something concerning. I remember working for French television and meeting Matias and telling him, and it made people making fun of me lately, because I said, you know, you look like a real clan. You're very close to each other, and you seem to be very much in love together. And when you see what's going on now, I mean, it's a real joke. You see the family falling apart, and that's what everybody sees, and there's a sad part of it is there. The Mbappe said that he talked to Pogba and said that it's not even a debate, and everything is so far so good in their relationship. They've never been very good friends, but they accepted each other, so it's going to stay like that.
To all, during your career, have you ever been in a situation where what you have said has been misinterpreted, and how it impacted you, and how you fixed it? Maybe from an interview, Stevie. You must have a story there. Or where a convenient quote was picked out and it didn't make you look so great. Can you think of anything, Frank, where you've been misinterpreted and how you had to fix things in your career?
Yes, when I played for Strasbourg, Bordeaux was relegated for administration reasons. And but they had players like Dugarry, Lizarazu playing for them. And And we fought all year long to the first spot. And I had an interview after the first game that we won 2-1 the last second. And I said after the game that Bordeaux was a very tough team and they didn't understood the how the League Two was working, and you needed, on top of being technical and being skillful, to be physical. And it's been interpreted that they were dirty, that they were unfair, that they were working to destroy the opponent. And I never said that. It went so high and so far that when we had the return game, we almost fought with Lizarraz, who became my best friend after that, because I explained to him. But everybody was getting crazy. We drew on the return game, but it was an awful atmosphere in the tunnel before the game. And I explained myself after that, but the journalist made the story on himself, and it's never what I said.
I actually do have one, and it's the only time. Because, listen, everybody at some stage has been misquoted. Because that's just what they do. That's what the newspapers do. They turn something you've said into something that it's not. But on this one occasion, Scotland were playing England at Wembley. And the previous Saturday, we had played in the FA Cup final, Liverpool against Wimbledon, and we'd lost 1-0. And we hadn't played well. And so the following Friday, the day before the Scotland-England game, I was asked at a press conference about Barnsley and Peter Beardsley. And I just kind of said, well, I hope things go as well for them tomorrow as they did last weekend. And so that got turned into, I said that they played bad and they were all these, you know, all this stuff. And so on the Saturday before the game, when I met Peter and Barnsley, I said, hey, by the way, and before I even said, they went, we know exactly, don't worry about it. So that's the only time.
And they already knew the way.
They already knew I wouldn't say anything like that anyway.
Well, this is not quite Scotland and England at Wembley, but still the same sort of situation in that we were playing away against Portland. And for people that are not familiar with Portland, they have a great environment in that stadium. And this was early days for Portland in Major League Soccer. I was with Chivas USA at the time. And I scored the game winner. We won 2-1. And I'm doing an interview with the local reporter from LA, or the beat reporter for Chivas USA at the time. And I said something along the lines that, you know, it was great to play in that environment in Portland, and hopefully this is something that we can use and we can take and take advantage of at home as well. It wasn't a comment about our fans or people not coming to the stadium. It was about Portland and how good that environment was. So the quote was not put in as a follow-up to the game that just happened. No, this particular reporter held on to whatever the quote was and saved it for 2 weeks later when we went back home. And somewhere the headline was something along the lines of, I thought that we didn't get enough support at home. I don't know how one thing leads to another and how what I said about the fans in Portland had anything to do with whatever we were doing or not doing at home, because we were terrible at home or away from home. But I knew this was late in my career, but it's confirmation of what you already know as a player, is that when you are talking to the media, when you're talking to reporters, you have to be very measured in what you say. Because even when you think you're saying something that is harmless, that you're simply paying tribute to a group of fans that created a really nice atmosphere away from home, they took that to, well, so you don't like your own fans. And so now I'm getting negative attention from the few fans that we had, because it's not like we had a bunch of fans. The few fans that we had now hated me. That was wonderful.
So did you try to fix it?
No, I didn't try to fix it. Are you kidding me? We were terrible.
It's even worse today. Like, we'll be doing this show now, and if it's a slow day back in England, they'll go on and watch our show and take things that we've said and turn it into something in the papers at home. So it's a constant. You're always going to get misquoted.
You never escape it.
Yep.
If the ESPNFC crew had unlimited resources and decided to run a club together, which club would you buy and why? Does that mean you guys have to all agree?
Yeah, well, that's the first problem. That's just not going to work.
Which club would you buy? I'd either buy the Continental or Stringfellows.
No!
That's what I'd do. The Continental.
You can't buy a nightclub.
Oh, a nightclub. I thought you meant a nightclub.
Especially the nightclubs you're talking about.
I'll tell you one thing. There's one thing. None of us are stupid enough to buy a football club. Oh. A nightclub, no. Now we're talking.
I was like, where does the Continental play?
Oh, the Continental.
Listen, don't let me have to tell you and explain this on this family show. Frank, which club would you buy?
Not the string fellow, what?
You know, with all the consent of everybody, well, that's going to be hard, you know, but to pay the respect to the elders that we have in the show, we'll have to go for Liverpool, I guess. Ali, what do you think?
Yeah, sure.
Liverpool?
What?
No, he wants a Continental.
You're
part of this consortium.
You're actually looking at me with a very serious face. As if it's like a serious question.
Well, you get the final say on if Liverpool's the club.
Oh, hi, Liverpool, yes, absolutely, yes. Do you need any tickets for the next game?
I would buy Monaco.
Just give me a shout.
Who would be the Todd Bowley of our consortium? That he's going to be at the forefront, sporting director. He's going to be doing the interviews. Who's going to be that guy? We cannot send Craig to do that because...
Well,
public relations is not his job.
What would he actually do?
Huh?
What could he do?
Well, Craig?
So Frank could be the sporting director.
Right.
Because he knows everybody.
Uh-huh.
So Frank could do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Craig could be the media guy.
What?
The media guy. Well, because anybody says anything wrong, he'll fling them out.
Oh, okay, all right. So like the bouncer kind of.
Aye. Yeah. And you saw the show the other night. He knows where all the cameras go and.
Yeah, he
knows all that stuff.
Why Shaka? What's he doing?
Well, he has a keys to the city.
Yeah.
International relations.
Yes, very much so. he would know where the Continental is.
I Shaka would know where that is.
Just as well, by the way, he's laughing.
And then when you asked him, you know when you said, Shaka, where's the cut? He would go, I have no idea. I don't understand what you're talking about.
Because obviously, he lives in my native northeast, and I named a few clubs, and he was pretending, I don't know any of those clubs.
No, Shaka would be the concierge, but the high class concierge. Where do you need to go? What do you need to do? What restaurant? Shaka would be the guy because he would have contacts everywhere.
Yeah, Julien Laurent could be the press officer.
Exactly.
Right.
So what's Craig doing that?
Yeah. Well.
Craig could be the manager.
A what?
At the club.
Well, I don't know.
He could be the gopher. get him out the road.
No,
go for that.
Craig can be the bad cop who tells people when it's a big firm no.
Right.
Yeah.
If you don't want
contract, you're not getting it.
You know, if you don't want that company's business, you send Craig into the meeting because he will destroy whatever relationship there was with that company. And there you go.
True.
We're done.
True.
All right.
Yeah. We're done.
Last question. Stevie versus Vinicius in a dance-off. Who wins?
I can't dance.
Well, we beg to differ.
Where? In the Continental?
Because hopefully not in Stringfellows. we've seen.
I
forgot about that particular quality.
Here we go. Bring it. Yeah. Bring it. Bring it down. Hey.
Hi.
Hey.
You're right, yeah.
Hey.
Actually, yes, you're right. Hey. Vinny, unlucky.
I gotta say, how is that any different from whatever Vinny Jr. is doing at the corner?
I can't see any difference myself.
No. No. I mean, hey, I'm going to tell you, there was a little Latin action there with the hip. Well, and a little dip there.
You got to use your whole body. Yeah. You get the elbows up as well.
So what you
got to get the elbows up
that's
as well.
That's the fake hip.
That's a Mariner one.
Ali, that's the trick of the fake hip.
Use your elbows, swivel the hips, yeah, and there you go. All you got to do is add a bit of music, and we're off.
But if you've done your DNA results, Emma, is there a bit of Brazilian in there?
It would appear so.
The dip of the shoulder, though. The people.
Well, I can't do the show. I'm getting my shoulder done on Wednesday.
Well. The mic falling off.
Oh, yeah. It was because the movement was so quick. That's how quick it was.
Who wins in a dance off, Frank? You get the final say. Vinicius or Stevie Nicol?
Well, after what I saw and the move of the fake hip, I think I would give Stevie a chance.
Thank you, Frank. Man knows his stuff.
No, but see what I like here is the commitment to the dip of the shoulder and the elbows. Dip! Now, I do have a question. Just for your technique. What are you grabbing when this? What are you pulling in?
It's probably getting, you know, my yacht.
Okay.
Well, normally when I'm pulling in the.
Yeah. Do you know my yacht?
Yeah. I'm pulling it in, isn't it? I like the lawnmower though.
Why don't you give us a little rendition?
The lawnmower
now,
one's good.
He was trying to grab the microphone, you know, the battery of the microphone.
Oh, it's gone.
Oh, what you got,
Stevie?
Good acting. Very good acting, Stevie.
Oh, good job on getting my shoulder done. Where's that?
Okay, that's all we've got time for.
That's a quick lawnmower.
We don't want to get any injured. He's already got shoulder surgery coming up, so we're going to let him rest after that. Thank you so much for sending in your tweets and your questions. We've had fun here on Extra Time. We'll be back tomorrow to do it all over again.